Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
On the southern coast of England, there are seagulls flying higher, still higher than before. It's as though they've been hoisted like a flag when the battle has been won.
Good evening, you are listening to Love Sport Radio, and this is the Brighton and Hove Albion fan show. Right, it's the international break this week, so we're mixing things up a little bit. Yes, we are going to get on to Josh Goldsmith of the Together podcast just to give us his reaction from that defeat to Manchester United last weekend. But first, we are going to speak to something of a Brighton great. Started his career with Kilmarnock, then he signed for Rangers, and then he came to England and signed for the mighty Brighton. Like I said, something of a great. He's got a column in the Matchday programme. His face is on a mural at the new stadium. But more importantly, and I'm not going to lie to you, I am rather jealous of this one. He is a man who has encountered and got on with Bananarama.
A pleasure. Thanks, Matt.
That must have been a great night, Bananarama. Crikey.
Yeah, that was amazing. On top of the Pops on the Thursday night before we played the cup final. And, you know, we were actually on there to promote our own song. And the amazing thing was when we got on there, that was the only time we found out that they couldn't play our song because our sales were regional. Although they were high, they were all from the Sussex area. So they said that you can't be on the charts if your song's regional. So what happened was then we had to just to go on and talk about the match coming up, the cup final, but they couldn't play our song. But we met Bananarama that night and it was great. The lovely girls, no doubt about that.
I'm sure they will. We'll get on to your career a bit later and touch on some of those great memories you had at the club. But just firstly, it is the international break, so often there is time to reflect on the season so far in the Premier League. And Brighton have started well under Graham Potter.
Yeah, they've done okay. I mean, the first win was great. The first home game, first away match of the season, they won at Watford, which was terrific. But, you know, since then, actually, they haven't won any other away games in the league. They've had one draw and then the rest have been defeats. And that's been a bit of a pity. But their home form has been good, Matt. You know, they've been winning the matches. And the main thing about it is, you know, they're picking up enough points at the moment. It's keeping them pretty safe positions, safe for the league, 11th positions, decent. And the main thing about it is that they've been playing good football. I think the fans are a lot happier with this season in terms of the sort of style of the play. And that's been good. And, you know, they're doing well. So it's going to be a long way to go yet. Obviously, a lot of hard games coming up. It's always tough in the Premiership in terms of how things go. But this is the main thing that, you know, they pick up and get the results for the actual, you know, that keeps them in that safe position. And so they don't have to, you know, make sure they get the points at the end of the season just to try and be safe. They want to try and be in a good, strong position so they can actually, you know, be comfortable and play in the top half of the league.
Yeah, indeed. Graham Potter spent upwards of around £60 million in the summer. Adam Webster came in, Leandro Trossard, we know, came in. Aaron Moy, initially on loan from Huddersfield, came in. And Neil Maupay as well came in from Brentford. 4 goals in 12 appearances for him starting at Brighton. Not the worst start to the Premier League, is it, for him?
No, that's been okay. I mean, he's amazing. He's come from Brentford, but, you know, he'd been in France before. And he played over there. He is a French lad, you know, but I mean, most people were quite surprised that, you know, he went from playing in France and then came to Brentford and then Brighton. But he has fitted in quite well. 4 goals, pretty good, you know. So he's having to replace, you know, you're looking at, you know, Murray as a very, very difficult player to come in and replace. I mean, he is at an older age now. There's no doubt about that, Glenn Murray. And that's the thing about it. They're definitely looking for somebody who can come in there and take over that role. You know, Moppy's like only 23, Neil Murray, Glenn Murray being 36. He's obviously at that time of his career, he's in the winter of his career, as opposed to Moppy, who's come in. And I think once he settles in there, he's not the tallest of players, that's the thing about him, he's not a big lad. But the thing about it is he's shown already that he can score goals at that level.
Indeed he has. And I just want to very quickly touch, Gordon, on VAR. I don't want to dwell on it too much, but there were some interesting articles. Again, this is the time where we can reflect on this type of thing, but there were some articles during the week about VAR and the difference that it might have made to the Premier League table with regards to had it been implemented versus had it not been implemented.
Yes.
And Brighton, it's exactly the same, 15 points with or without VAR, so zero difference to their campaign so far.
Yes. Well, I'll be honest with you. I first put this to, when I was on committees with UEFA and FIFA, and I first put this to them when I was at the SFA 2009, that I thought that we should have we'd be able to look at video evidence, we call it VAR now, and in order to improve situations where bad decisions have been made because of the referee not seeing things properly. So I'm all in favour of VAR, but I think it's causing such a fuss because it takes so long. I don't see why it has to take so long. And you know, if someone can see a situation, they can rule pretty quickly and say, it's clear, here's what it is. But when I put this case forward for VAR, I actually said how it should be progressed is the fact that it should come from the technical area, and that each technical area has two protests per game, two situations per game from the technical area where they actually say, I want this looked at, and then only then. So if they get it wrong, they lose that opportunity again. If they get it right, like they do in tennis, you know, talking about the situation, then they get they still keep their two if it's correct. So that's the way I wanted to do it, and I felt it was the right thing to do because we should be very clear about it. If it's very obvious that a decision is wrong and the referee hasn't seen it properly, then he should be informed about that, I think.
Can I ask you, Gordon, how you think you would have dealt with VAR? Because one of the things that strikes me about players is that I don't know whether they've been informed by clubs to look just soft pedal, they've been informed by the media departments to look just stay quiet, don't say anything about it, you don't want to get fined. But I feel like if I was a player, that, you know, you're passionate about the game, that if these decisions are going against you and sometimes it feels like an injustice, I'd be going loopy. And I'd almost threaten to walk off the pitch, or I'd be saying stuff in post-match interviews. But most of the time, the players just come out and go, it is what it is, we have to deal with it.
Yes. Well, are you meaning they're actually complaining of the fact that the VAR decision was wrong?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Well,
that situation, yeah.
I think, and maybe I'm completely wrong about this, but I feel like players surely aren't happy with the way that it's working at the moment. I think that football was football. It's great. It's a very impulsive, very spontaneous sport that doesn't measure up to a lot of other sports like you mentioned there. And I feel like, just put it in the referee's hands. Yes, he's going to make some mistakes, but sometimes when someone's left toe is offside, I want a player to come out and say, that's ridiculous, we shouldn't be using it for this. But everyone seems to be remaining quite tight-lipped on it.
Yes, I think so. I think there is still a situation where that is the case. I mean, we've seen over the years that some linesmen gave offside when it wasn't, when it was shown back again. And so I definitely think we should have an opportunity. And I'll tell you what, I'll give you a good example of it, and you may agree with this, Matt. I watched a game, a film last night on TV about Maradona. Mm. Now, when Maradona, punched the ball into the England net in the World Cup, would you have liked that to be looked at again?
Absolutely, yeah.
I think you would have, yes, right? So there's a perfect scenario of it, of where VAR could have made a big difference if it had been already in the game. Because let's be honest, everyone sitting at home watching that game was fully aware that that goal should have been disallowed, and yet the referee didn't get told, no one to help him. So that we have to have some sort of situation there. But I think it's maybe getting used too often. As I say, I believe that if we cut it right down to the fact that each technical area has two challenges per game based on the VAR, then I think we'd see it coming into the game a lot less, and it wouldn't be such a big issue.
Couldn't agree more with you again there, Gordon. Just going to quickly move on to some of the good bits about your career. I know I mentioned Bananarama, but there is quite a musical theme for you throughout your time as a player. Am I right in thinking that you developed a bit of a friendship with both Paul McCartney and Rick Wakeman as well?
That's right. Well, not so much Rick Wakeman. He actually he came to speak to me one night. The first concert I was ever at was a Yes concert, and I wanted to. I was playing in a golf tournament, a celebrity golf thing in Carnoustie, and he was there. And I thought, I wonder how I'm going to introduce myself to him. I need to go and speak to him and tell him I was at my first ever concert he was involved in. And I was in the toilet, and I turned around after washing, drying my hands, turned around, and Rick Wakeman was standing in front of me, and he said, "Hi, Gordon." He said, "I just wanted to come and speak to you." He says, "I was a big fan of yours when you were at Manchester City." And I couldn't believe it. Yeah. I was like, "You never believe this, Rick." I was trying to think about how I could come and speak to you. So that was fantastic. But the other one was obviously Paul McCartney was someone, and it came up again. What was magnificent, he invited me to his house when I got to know him and all that. And so I was in his house, enjoyed an afternoon with him and the family. And then about last year there, I met someone who was involved in his security. And he said to me, I told him, I used to know Paul and all that sort of thing. So the next thing was the guy emailed me and said, "Paul's leaving you a couple of tickets for the concert in Glasgow." And I said, "That's great." And then about a week before the concert, I got another email saying, "Paul wants to meet you before the concert." And I was like, "Really?" And he went, "Yeah." And so he says, "He's leaving you two VIP tickets for the lounge and he wants to meet you before the show." So went along the night and got to meet him again. And it was great to catch up with him. He remembered me being in his house. He remembered us being friends years ago. So that was lovely because he's such a great guy. He was such a nice person to know. He really was.
That is an awesome story. Arguably one of the best stories I think we've ever had on this station, Gordon. Just to quickly talk about your experiences of being a Brighton player. We actually had a caller from Everton on a few weeks back when Brighton were playing Everton, and he wanted to focus on the last time the two teams met at the Goldstone Ground in 1983, which of course was that big season where Brighton reached the FA Cup final but went down. And that particular game, and what struck me most about that game was the fact that good old Steve Foster had been pushed up pretty much as a front man there with his headband, looking lively as he always does. Now, Steve Foster, quite a character in his time, I'm sure, and forgive me if I'm wrong, I'm sure you must have a story or two about him.
Oh, Fozzie, yeah, Fozzie was brilliant. The story that I always tell people about Fozzie is he was fantastic. And he invited me, my wife was up north one weekend, she'd come home with the kids, so Fozzie said to me, "You're on your own, come to my house for dinner." So I went round to his house and he said, and now this is another story about actually that a lot of people maybe know about now if you read my book. When I went to Brighton, when I signed for Brighton, the players used to wonder if I was really Scottish. I didn't drink, I didn't golf, and I didn't gamble. And so they got me into all three. But I liked drinking. I went to Fozzie's house and Fozzie opened a beer. "You having a beer?" I was like, no, thanks. He opened another beer. "You sure not having one?" I went, "No." He opened the third beer. Then his wife shouted, "He's through for dinner." We went through. Fozzie opens a bottle of wine. "You having some wine?" I went, "No." And then when he opened the second bottle of wine, he said, "You sure you're not having any?" And I went, I said, "Foz, we're playing Liverpool tomorrow." He says, "I know, that's why I'm taking it easy."
Brilliant.
I was like, "All right."
That's excellent.
Anyway, yeah. He was taking it easy. And when I found out the guys were, they liked to drink down there, the boys, it was a fantastic social life. It really was. I mean, you'll see it. I got into golf out down there for the first time. And I did begin to have a drink with the boys because I felt I was peer group pressure. I felt left out a little bit in terms of when the boys were out for a night out. But Fozzie was a great leader. He was a top-class player. He really was. And that was why, to a certain degree, I once did say to him, between the two games, I actually said, "I've done you a favour missing that chance against Manchester United, Fozzie, because you can now play in the replay." Because he'd been left out the first game because of a suspension, which I felt was ridiculous. And one of the things I did try to change when I was at the SFA and didn't get anywhere with it was to stop the fact that a booking could stop you playing in the final. Because my whole point about it was that you can't appeal a booking, you know what I mean? You can't appeal a yellow card. And you might falsely get a yellow card and you have to miss one of the biggest games of your life, your career. So I thought it was ridiculous, but some people just didn't seem to think it that way. They just thought, no, a booking deserved missed. You missed the final, that's it. But Fozzie missed the first game, but managed to play in the replay, which didn't work out all that well for him, obviously. But he was a great player, a great lad, and I think he was the sort of mainstay of the club at that time, no question of it.
Well, Gordon, I'm glad you brought up that final because it means I don't have to be so cliche and worry about introducing something that you've probably talked about until you're blue in the face. And I'm not going to dwell on it too much. But yes, Peter Jones and Smith must score. Of course, it's lived on that particular quote. I kind of want to come at this from a slightly different angle because I was watching some footage actually the other day, entirely coincidentally, where Ron Atkinson commented on Gary Bailey and said, "Oh, do you know what? I think he just sat on it. It was quite fortunate." But For you, Wembley at the time was a quagmire of a pitch. You took a great first touch. Yes, arguably, I suppose, you should have scored. But I feel like people don't focus enough on the save from Gary Bailey.
Well, Gary Bailey once said that in an interview I was doing with him. And I said, Gary, he said, I don't get enough credit. People always just talk about Gordon Smith's miss. He says, I don't talk about my save. I said, Gary, I wish they did talk more about your save because it would take it off me a bit. But I don't take anything away from the fact that I actually should have scored. In that situation, what I decided to do was hit the ball low. I thought Gary was going to come towards me, and he didn't. And it was something that I didn't normally do, and I don't know why to this day I still did that, and I regret it greatly. As I say, I feel more now, Matt, that it hurts me more now than it even did then, because I was a professional player. You've got to go over these things and play in the next game, right? But at that time, I was able to do that. But see, now it's still something that rankles with me. And although he doesn't get the credit, Gary Bailey, and I wish he did, I still fully take the blame of it. And there's no doubt about it that to this day, I still think I should have scored. And it's a lot to do with the fact it wasn't such a horrendous miss. It was the timing of it as well, Matt. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Last minute, two each in the game, cup final, and you know the game's over. If I score that goal, the whistle blew about 10 seconds later. You know what I mean? So that's how it goes, and that's why to this day, I still regret it greatly.
Yeah, well, you did, like you say, you bookended your career. You are Scottish, of course. Started with Kilmarnock, went on to Rangers, and ended with Stirling Albion. I just want to very quickly touch on, before you go, Gordon, it's been great having you on, the fact that you were chief exec of the Scottish Football Association, the SFA, for a while. This is international break, and I think it's worth noting that you were pivotal in that Home Nations agreement, which basically allowed players educated in a home nation for 5 years before the age of 18 to then go on and represent that nation at international level. And I think before that agreement had been reached, we would have been without a lot of players. I think Raheem Sterling is a fine example of this, right? He's benefited from the agreement, that education clause that you helped to introduce.
Yes. I was glad the other nations agreed with me, because what happened was we had an agreement with other nations. What happened was that FIFA brought in a rule was that if a player was playing in a country for a certain amount of time, they could change nationality as long as they've been playing in that country. And we, the home associations, the four countries, got together and said, we don't agree to that. We feel that it should still be the same, that it comes down to where you're born, grandparents and parents. That's the key issue to become an international player. So what happened, though, I came up with an idea and said, look, some people change country because not to be playing football in that country, but they've just been brought up. They've come across to another country because their family have moved there, and therefore we should be looking at scenarios and saying these people should be able to, you know, if they're grown up in a country, they should be able to play for that country by changing nationality then. And I put it to the other three associations, and they agreed to it. And so that's why it got brought in as a legislation for the four home nations, because they did feel, they agreed with me, that that is a different scenario from someone just coming to play football in the country. It means they've been educated. As what I put in the figure 5 years. I said, as long as it's 5 years minimum they're in the country, then that means they've moved there and they're now a citizen of that country. And if they've changed nationality, passport, they can then play. And as I say, it became the agreed legislation.
Brilliant. Fascinating stuff, Gordon. Fair play to you for helping to introduce that. It's been great having you on. No doubt, I'm sure we'll probably speak again, perhaps when Brighton reach an FA Cup final at the end of the year, maybe.
I hope so. And if it's Manchester United, certainly you'll hear a lot about me, probably.
Cheers, Gordon.
Cheers, Matt. Thank you very much.
Well, that was Gordon Smith. What a man he is. Some great stories there, talking about Paul McCartney and Rick Wakeman and, like I said, Bananarama. And that miss against Manchester United in that FA Cup final, you just feel that maybe, it's almost affected him more in later life than it did when he was a footballer. But a great chap. Perhaps we'll get him on again, because some great stories he had to tell there. Right, this is the Brighton Fan Show. Next up, we are going to be speaking to Josh Goldsmith of the Together podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
It's the Brighton Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11pm this evening. After the Brighton Fan Show, we will have the El Clasico Fan Show. We'll be speaking to Dan Hilton of the Barcelona podcast and also the guys from Managing Madrid. But right now, we've got Josh Goldsmith on the line from the Together podcast. Josh, it's great having you on. Thought we'd quickly just reflect on that defeat to Manchester United last week. And when all things are said and done, I have to say that a defeat perhaps wasn't the most surprising of results because, of course, Brighton haven't won any of their 15 Premier League away games against Big Six opposition. Now, I know you can call Man United Big Six this season. However, that is 15 games drawn once and lost 14 times. I mean, that's staggering. It's just four goals scored in that time, 33 conceded. So realistically, it was kind of one of those games that you were never going to win.
Yeah, it does feel like that a little bit. But this season under Potter, I felt like, you know, we lost in a different way. We lost from attacking as opposed to defending. It was probably the first time this season that I think Potter got it wrong tactically. I think he set out the formation wrong. I think his lineup was wrong. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how he adapts to it. And the fact that he made two substitutions at halftime leads me to believe that he thought he'd made a mistake as well. So I'm hoping he's going to learn from it. And the next time we go visit a Big Six, we're not going to get tanked so easily.
It's funny you say that because it was interesting listening to Graham Potter after the game. He did seem quite matter of fact, didn't he? You know, he said they deserved to win the game. The players gave their best. Sometimes you have to just accept that we were playing against a better team. And I think that almost Graham Potter, I don't want to say that he felt resigned to defeat before the game, but it did feel after the game. And perhaps there wasn't so much that he could say. Perhaps it was purely just the way that things work. And listen, you had superior possession to Manchester United. You were better with your passing statistics. But we know, like you said, it's almost losing in a different way now for Brighton.
Yeah, and I mean, those first two goals were a bit brutal as well. That deflection was huge, and that made a big difference because that first goal going in early for United really, really boosted their confidence. You could see it run through them when they scored. And after that, they really were like the Manchester United that you can consider a top six. And I agree with him fully. Like, we were beaten by the much better team on the day. I just think that he did get it wrong as well. And yeah, like you said, like it is more attacking now, and that's great. But I think he needs to find the nice kind of middle ground, and I'm hoping that he will do. We still have, you know, Arsenal away coming up pretty soon as well, so it's going to be interesting to see how he operates there with just a couple of weeks gone to this game.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the possession and the fact that you didn't really attack Manchester United, because that's true. And listen, United were guilty of this, I think, under Louis van Gaal, that they kept the ball a lot and they passed it around a lot, but nothing ever really happened. And when you look at the possession stats, yes, 57% possession in that game at Old Trafford last week, but just six shots and only two on target. So it's all very well passing the ball around, but if you're not going to do anything, if you're not going to penetrate, then those stats are actually a little bit misleading, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I think that was the big difference between this game and most of our other games in this season. You know, we've dominated the ball and we've also had a whole bunch of chances. You know, when you look at like Newcastle away, Villa away, and like Southampton at home, all of these games that we've maybe not come out with the best result from, you can't say that we're not holding the ball and creating the chance. But this time, they were just so quick and so dangerous on the counter-attack. It looked like we were, especially after half-time, it almost looked like we were a little bit afraid to overextend ourselves. And that led to, as you know, like the poor attacking returns in the end. So it'll be interesting to see how we go from here.
Well, when you say, Josh, that you thought he got it wrong, in what way do you think he got it wrong? Yes, he brought on Solly March and Glenn Murray at the break, and you said that maybe gave a signal of the fact that he realised he'd got it wrong. But what for you was wrong about his team selection and the way he approached the match?
Yeah, I think it was the formation that he started operating with. So he started out in a 4-4-2, and I'd been saying all week to anyone that would listen that, you know, when you have a front four of like Martial, Pereira, Daniel James, Marcus Rashford, and there's that much pace and that much danger in your front four, despite how Manchester United are right now, and they had been in a little bit of a slump. You know, I think you need to pretty much try and man mark each and every one of them, and bringing in a 4-4-2, it just enabled those four to run riot, and they did. That we were overwhelmed all the time, and once it came to the second half, Potter made that change and went to a back five with wing backs with Solly March coming on. And you could see the difference almost immediately in that they couldn't carve us up just so easily. And they had to adapt their play a little bit. And they were still by far the better team. But I think that was going to probably be more of a winning formula than the 4-4-2 that he started out with.
Yeah, indeed. It is now down to 11th spot as well. I mean, we say down, realistically, when you look at the Premier League, and I'm sure we've discussed this many times before, but Sheffield United in 5th place in 17th, all the way down to West Ham. I'm going to go to West Ham in 16th place with 13 points. That is 4 points separating West Ham in 16th and Sheffield United in 5th. I know we're only 12 games in, but I can't recall a Premier League being this tight at this stage for a heck of a long time. And when you look at last week's results, yes, Bournemouth, Burnley, Brighton, yourselves, Crystal Palace, Newcastle, Tottenham and Everton all dropped down the league just purely because United and Wolves got those victories, and on goal difference they are ahead of other teams. But you know, Brighton on 15 points, Burnley on 15 points, Palace, Newcastle on 15 points, it's just so close.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think I've ever seen it so tight, especially 12 games in. That does tend to start, like, you do start to see like a subset of groups all kind of break away. Like, you'll have your top two and then your top, like, the four after, and then four in the middle, and then you have like your bottom five, and this year there is none of that. You have like your bottom two, and then everybody else is crammed in, barring of course Liverpool, who are flying. But it's interesting, and I would bite your hand off for 11th if you're calling me on game 38, and we're like, well, Brighton finished in 11th. You will hear me singing from the rooftops, because that would be incredible.
Yeah, it certainly would be a successful first season for Graham Potter. It is international break at the moment, Josh, so we're going to speak to you before the upcoming game with Leicester. But like I said, after that international break, it's not getting any easier, mate. Leicester at home and then both Liverpool and Arsenal away. So all hands on deck.
Yeah, about as brutal as it gets.
Josh, thanks very much for joining us, boss.
Thank you.
That was Josh Goldsmith of the Together podcast. Looking back on that defeat to Manchester United last week, a big day for United, really, more so than it was for Brighton. Of course, United moving up to 7th in the Premier League, their highest position since September. So perhaps good times are coming back to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And just lastly, one final stat to give on Brighton is that since the start of last season, Brighton have scored more own goals than any other team in the Premier League. There you go. This is the Brighton Fan Show on Love Sport. Next, El Clasico.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Winter is here, and if your furnace isn't keeping up, don't worry. Care Heating and Cooling has you covered. Our expert technicians are paid to fix your furnace, not sell you a new one. That means when Care shows up, we're there to solve the problem, not to push a sale. With 30 years of award-winning, trusted service, you can count on Care to keep your home warm and comfortable. Call Care Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or schedule an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com. When you need a company you can trust.